Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want a cup of joe with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 119. Jeff D. Lowe, Ken Jack, Gooch coming at you. It is a middle of the week podcast, post July 4th, in what could only be described as one of the biggest dead period movie review episodes that we've ever had. We want to so badly review these great massive releases that are coming out, but we're stuck on Insidious and The Red Door because Mission Impossible does come out middle of the week. We're not going to review it till next week. Got to get people the weekend to see it. And then the week after that, we're going to have, you know, Oppenheimer, Barbie, and then the train kind of rolls on the rest of the summer. But this, it's like just one, it's an exercise in patience, with Insidious and The Red Door, which is the fifth Insidious movie.
They're in the same universe as, old Annabelle. Whatever, the Patrick Wilson horror expanded universe.
Just an absolute ripper of five movies. Insidious, which I don't love Insidious. I don't like it, but I also like, I get it. I get why people like it. Insidious Chapter 2, a small drop off from the first. Insidious Chapter 3, I almost said Insidious. That's the spinoff of the good place. a large drop off from Chapter 2, and then Insidious the Last Key was fucking horrible. And I'll tell you what, the Last Key came out, I want to say around COVID. No, it came out before that. It's been 5 years. I'll tell you what, there's someone who is a fan of Insidious and Mission Impossible, and it's like, man, the 5 year wait for both of these has been unbelievable. This movie, The Red Door, might be worse than the last game. It stinks.
Jeff, I don't want to be mean to 2X returning guest Patrick Wilson, but yeah,
he did his best. He was trying. I'll say that much. But Jeff, you really undersold. You told me it was bad, and then I watched it, and I was like, "Holy shit!"
I was surprised you hadn't seen any of these.
The title alone terrifies me. Insidious.
Well, The Red Door is also very scary. Like that's a combination of two very scary things. But it was like watching Patrick Wilson. It was like watching a pilot try to land a plane on like a 10-foot runway. You know what I mean? Like there's nowhere to go with Insidious. No. Like you got zero runway with that. So I felt bad.
And we'll get into it. The premise and the plot and the story and the character and there's Tyson kind of two main characters. Oh my god! One of them, I just couldn't.
One of the worst characters I've seen in recent memory.
Also, one of the most preposterous storylines on no planet in 2023 would there be a guy and a girl roommate in college.
Oh no, god!
And no. I don't care how they explain it. There's no exception that would be fixed within 15 seconds of stepping on campus.
Mm-hmm. Especially Jeff, if one of them was playing the fucking whatever that thing is, the blow piano bullshit, they'd be out so fast.
It's her hooter.
Yeah,
you forget that it's a liberal arts college. Liberal.
True. That could Maybe they allow. I was like, well, that's just not believe. There's a demon that possesses someone in this storyline,
and that's and more. Yet,
I'm like, the college roommate thing is the least believable thing I've seen in this movie.
Yeah.
So we're dropping a little later on Tuesday because the Willy Wonka or Wonka trailer is coming out with Timothy Chalamet and Hugh Grant, who we've already seen a picture this morning.
Yeah.
We're going to be able, we're gonna watch it live, by the way.
Saying Hugh Jackman on the meme.
I was putting the rundown together. Leave me alone.
We will talk about Hugh Jackman. We have a lot to talk about Deadpool.
Kind of Hugh Jackman Deadpool, Wonka would actually be kind of cool.
The Deadpool thing is very interesting because it's to a point where we've seen a lot of stuff, but I'm also like, all right, maybe that's enough now. Like, because now I'm like, all this seems cool, but now all this is I guess ruined for the mainstream public at this point. Maybe not the mainstream, but like pretty close to mainstream. It's like, it's not like these are just, you know, Reddit leaks or spoilers. Like, these are things that are just out there now. We'll get to that in a minute too, but we will watch the Wonka trailer live, and react to it. I don't know what to expect. We talked about this morning, they played Pure Imagination in the trailer for the trailer, which begs the question, is this like a song that Willie just sings, has been singing his whole life? This is a great example of Patton Oswalt does a bit about the Star Wars prequels where people are like, where it's like George Lucas, he would go back in time and kill George Lucas with a shovel if he could, just be like, hey, like, you like Boba Fett? Like, yeah, it's like, hey, you get to see him as a little kid. It's like, sure, I guess. Like, that's great. So it's like, that's one of those things. Like, I don't know about Wonka. We'll see though. We'll see the trailer. And we also have an interview with Pom Klintieff. She is in Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning. We also have an interview with Simon Pegg. But Simon Pegg, he didn't spoil anything. But Simon Pegg, I think the interview will be better if you've seen the movie already, because he references things a little more directly. So we're going to hold off on the Simon Pegg interview. So we have two Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning interviews that we will be dropping. First one today with one of the villains from the movie. First up, though, 3Chi, sponsor of this episode. We love 3Chi. We've been talking about 3Chi for years now, not just at Lights, Camera, Barstool, but the entire company, Barstool Sports. 3G highest quality cannabis products that you'll find anywhere. They're delicious Delta 9 edibles, industry leading Delta 8 products as well, and their new line of Delta 9O vapes and everything in between. All also big time if you're a racing fan. They have their new product, which I think is one of the best tie-ins to an athlete I've ever heard. NASCAR driver Kyle Busch, they have their Kyle Kush disposable vape. I'm not kidding. That sounds like a bit Ken Jack made up, like from when we do like the fake Denny's menu.
Yes.
excuse me. No, Kyle Kush is the real deal. Shout out NASCAR. Shout out Robin's Race and Large and Spider. Much more. They got their great blend. Their disposable vapes are designed to deliver an exhilarating vaping experience that you won't forget. Race to 3chi.com. Get your Kyle Kush. Get your gummies. People love the gummies for flying, by the way. People think, and they say it, and 3chi is great for flights. Maybe great for like a wacky – go see Wonka. With save up those 3chi for going to see Wonka. And we know their edibles are unbelievable. Just delicious baked goods. Like, it also gives you the great feeling of taking 3chi, but also they just taste great too. And hard to find sometimes. They're out of stock pretty quick. So make sure you go in there, get those gooey brownies, those Rice Krispie treats, cookies, and more. And the Kyle Kush. Lights, Camera, Barstool listeners get 50% discount on all 3Chi's premium THC products. Go to 3Chi, the number 3CHI.com. Use promo code LIGHTS15 to take 15% off your order. Must be 21 or older to purchase. And please use it responsibly. This is the real deal. It's not CBD, as we always remind you. It will get you high. Deadpool 3 stuff. We'll start with that. The big one off the top is the first look. And I'll note, spoilers. This is stuff that's out publicly. They're posting about it. This is not like we're talking about leaked things that have not been discussed in the mainstream zeitgeist of comic book movies. But if you don't want anything spoiled for Deadpool 3, I would probably skip ahead.
It's crazy. They are just spoiling their own movie.
Dumb. Very dumb.
Yeah, so Hugh Jackman. First look at Hugh Jackman in the comic accurate X-Men suit. A lot of speculation for a while that Deadpool would help tie the X-Men into the MCU with time travel. Obviously, we had a lot of time travel with Cable, character played by Josh Brolin. So there's been a lot of discussion about that, like what different X-Men and Fox characters we'd see in the first MCU Deadpool. Jennifer Garner apparently going to be in the movie as Elektra. There's long been rumors that Ben Affleck will be back as Daredevil. There's also a this is kind of the bigger one, a set photo of a 20th Century Fox logo like crashed down on set. So like super meta, which you expect, that's Deadpool. All this is very cool. It looks badass. Also, Kendrick, I know, Kendrick, you love the first picture of the Hugh Jackman thing was so grainy.
It was maybe 3 pixels total. It was incredible. It's like fucking incredible stuff on their part. I just think this is so dumb. The fact that they publicly put all this shit out this early. And like, there was rumors that he was going to be in the suit and all that beforehand. But like, that is a moment that I would love to see live. Seeing even like, I'm not like like a fucking Daredevil fan or or like an Elektra Jennifer Garner fan or anything like that. That's something that'd be cool to see in the movie. I don't want any of that leaked. I don't want to know any of this information. And it's like pissing me off the fact that like I now know it, because it's ruining what could have been a pretty cool theater experience. And I don't know. I mean, it's not like I'm not going to go see this movie now because of that, but it's just, it makes, I know what I'm missing now, which is frustrating to me as a fan of these movies.
Yeah, everything about this like production has been a little rocky. It feels like from like they're continuing through the writer's strike, which I know pissed a ton of people off. And then these just you can't get on, like if you want to avoid stuff, you have to stay off Twitter right now. Like, it's not just the stuff that is like leaking, like the set photos, the 20th Century Fox thing. Like it is just straight up stuff that they are releasing themselves, and it makes, like Ken Jack said, it makes no sense. The suit looks cool, I guess. Yes, I don't know. No. People really freaked out over the suit. I like the suit.
Why?
I like the early biker gang stuff that they did at Fox.
Why didn't they like the suit? What did they think was wrong with it?
No, they liked it. People liked it a lot. Like they freaked out like in a good way. They're like, God. They soy faced.
Gotcha.
They did. They just,
I thought the suit was cool.
They're like, the suit's yellow. It's like the cartoon.
Just kind of used to seeing Wolverine in like a leather jacket or some shit. You know what I mean? It's kind of cool to see just one little throwback bit.
Yeah.
Like that's what will happen if they ever show Gambit again. He'll have that stupid anti-mask that covers every part of his head except for his face.
Just horny.
It's funny. We actually talked to Simon Pegg about this a little bit. Maybe not like this directly, though. We did actually reference the Hugh Jackman Wolverine thing, Deadpool thing with Hugh Jackman. But there is something, you know, we're getting ready to see like the theatrical release of Mission Impossible, you know, something like an Oppenheimer, which is less, there's not like a connective tissue with Oppenheimer, just kind of a one-off thing. But you talk about that, you talk about Top Gun, and there's something so pure about the surprise. Like I just rewatched Fallout. There's something so pure about like the Wolf Blitzer thing in the beginning. There's there's all these surprises and these moments and these things you don't expect, because yes, there are ways to find spoilers and leaks and everything, but it doesn't exist as much in a movie like Mission Impossible, like a Top Gun, like these big, like these Tom Cruise vehicles. And it's kind of why, again, we're comic book guys. Like I love these movies and they've definitely fallen off to an extent. Like they've hit a big bump in the road, but it's this over spoiler. Like imagine like the Doctor Strange cameos would have been great if we had not known about them for so fucking long. If we had not, if they'd not been leaked, if they'd not been talked about, there's just so many little things that you're like, damn man. Like I don't even Spider-Man. Like imagine we'd never known that those guys were going to be in it. Like if we had not seen leaks, it's like, it's tough, and at this, like, while you don't want it, like that's never going to end. And it's another reason why I'm so excited for Mission Impossible in theaters. It's like, I don't know the surprises. Like I'm going to see a genuine movie experience.
And it's not like in my mind, like people always got pissed off when like people would tweet or react to like Game of Thrones or some shit or some other thing, which is essentially live appointment television. And like, they'd be like, oh, I can't be on Twitter for the next 24 hours. Like that's like a joy compared to what you would have to do to avoid comic book movie spoilers at this point, because you need to be off all of social basically until the movie comes out, if you want to avoid it. Otherwise, someone's going to bump it into your timeline. It's going to be put out somewhere. You're going to see a headline. It doesn't matter. And like every major publication basically has to publish it. You know what I mean? Like if they put out fucking a picture of Hugh Jackman in this thing, like what's comicbookmovie.com going to do? They're not going to report it. Like they're not going to make that a major headline. That's going to get a bunch of clicks. Like everyone has you're in a really shit spot as a fan. And it really is just frustrating. You know, I don't want to know any of this. I want to go in with virgin brain and ears and eyes and everything. I want to be the monkey.
It also, and it's not even just like comic book stuff. Like think about what the one publication, like think about how, what they did with The Rock and Fast and the Furious, right?
Exactly,
or think about,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, is that big of a moment? No, it's not. But like, he's back in a franchise that he had basically denounced, that they said he'd never return in. I would have liked to have seen that, or at least at least give me the chance to see it. Like, it's one thing to have it leaked. There's another thing where it's like, hey, exclusive. This thing happens.
Yeah, and yeah.
That's fucking insane. Imagine that, like, hey, exclusive, Darth Vader, father of Luke. Like,
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I know it's not that level of surprise, but like, it's just a part of the movie. Like, what are we exclusiving that for? Go see the movie or don't make it. If you think that's how you need to market the movie.
Also with the Wolverine thing, we've reached a point now with like the multiverse meta movies and everything like that, where like, I don't think we need to see Elektra. I think that was, you could leave that one in the past. We don't need to see every former portrayer of a character return into their role. I've hit a point where I'm like, okay, I'm done with this bit.
What if we get, what if we get Colin Farrell? What if we get Colin Farrell's
as Bullseye or whatever? Yeah.
He did kill her, right? Or
I even forgot that, like, Andy Muschietti, even he was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, Nick Cage is in the movie.
Exactly. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, actually, maybe like, they needed to do that.
For money.
Hemorrhaging money. They needed any way to market that movie if possible.
Just don't. I don't know. It's just like, it feels cheap now, you know? Cheaper than it did.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, someone did the math on The Flash. Speaking of losing money. If they had just released it on HBO Max, they would have made more money.
Not surprising. Like,
because of the marketing cost on the movie, that fucked them.
Also, including $10 million paid out to Tom Cruise to say it was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Accounts payable.
No, I imagine he just goes to the movies and he's just like, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, he likes everything.
Mm-hmm. He's just sitting there like, clapping for 2 hours.
He's watching Past Lives. He's like, this is my shit right here, baby. He's like in the back. He's
loud trailer reaction guy where he like knows the Dune trailer. He's like, oh, yo.
He's in like Sound of Metal, like, that's my boy, Riz. Just yelling at people and like not blockbuster movies.
He was whooping and hollering when Brendan Fraser was jacking off in the whale.
Oh, yeah. That's my guy right there. Have they ever been in? No. No, they should be, though.
Yeah. You know, he was getting the crowd go when the red door popped up for the first time.
Yeah.
The further, man. I missed the further.
It's so that's Deadpool 3 stuff, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where the Hugh Jackman thing's fine. Like, I think would I have liked to have not seen it until the movie? Sure. But, like, the Hugh Jackman thing is fine. But, like, it's in some of the cameos and, like, the Fox thing. It's like, it's like, all right, enough. Stop. Yeah. Stop showing stuff.
And I think we could just be done with that element of bringing back old actors to reprise. I think I'm at the point with that.
Like, there's, like, I mean, that's the thing with marketing. I get it. They got to make money. But, like, even, like, Dead Reckoning is about to make, like, $250 million its first weekend, maybe more. And... Also, Paramount Plus does this. It drives me fucking insane. When you're binging these Mission Impossible movies, they keep showing the Mission Impossible trailer before. Stop showing the trailer for the movie that is like that's that's crazy.
I rewatched a couple of them the last weekend, and it was very frustrating.
What do they do?
Even if you pay for Paramount Plus, like the full package, which I don't even know if there's a difference, because I paid for since it came out, they autoplay the Dead Reckoning trailer before every Mission Impossible movie or everything you watch on Paramount Plus. So it's like if you're binging Mission Impossible, you're getting the seventh movie trailer. And they released a new trailer yesterday. The movie's out today. Like, I get it. It's marketing. They want to make money, but you're going to make the money. You don't need to cut a new trailer or new clips.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I thought you were saying that they play a trailer from the movie you're watching right before it. Because I was like, well, that's what Mission Impossible does. Their little opening, little credit scene. They always just, I love that about Mission Impossible. They just play, they play a trailer from the movie during the credits. They're just showing like what's going to happen. You're just like,
exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
I can't wait for that
part. Just yell in your theater, don't look.
Yeah.
What's that? I think, what's the I think you should leave skit where he says no hitting? What is it when he hires?
Oh, like, Johnny Carson.
The Johnny stable Carson.
Yeah. The stable of stars, baby.
Stable of stars. Christopher Nolan says, and this is awesome, but it also annoyed me that Oppenheimer has zero CGI shots.
Beast mode.
What a psychopath.
That's why I gotta love him, man.
Has anybody heard from New Mexico the past 6 months?
Yeah. It'd be funny though if the atom bomb explosions look terrible. Like they did a horrible job with like the miniature or whatever they do. It's like, I mean, this is not very surprising. It looks awesome. I don't really know what to say about Oppenheimer anymore. I hope it's great, but there's also this like really odd, well, I don't know if you guys agree with this. There's this tiny sliver. And their reviews aren't public yet, right?
I hadn't seen any.
Some have seen it. Because they showed off like the role of IMAX in New York last week. Yeah. But for like a screening. But there's like there's a couple little things where I just think to myself, like, what if it's not good? Or like, what if it's like just okay? It's not gonna be bad, but like what if it's like even like it's very long. I love long movies, so I'm not saying that's like a reason why I'm going to dislike it, even though we just reviewed a movie where I said it was too long and that was my problem with it. But like it's a long movie. It's 3 hours. They talk, and I know this makes me sound like a prude, but even the sex scene thing, it's like this long, full – it's like, all right, that seems like – like
Nerd.
Yeah, but it's like, all right.
Don't show me Florence Pugh's cheeks.
Florence Pugh's titty. No, Florence
Pugh. Like the headline
don't
on
take
that.
Your clothes
it was like,
off.
I don't know. I think it's going to be great, and I hope it's the best movie ever. But it's like Oppenheimer to feature prolonged full nudity. It's like, all right.
Duh.
Quit spoiling stuff.
Integral part of the Oppenheimer story.
So whenever you hear the word prolonged. I don't know.
Prolonged? So what? Like 30 seconds?
I could just see this movie being too much in many spots. Because he can do that. He's done that. Tenet, it did it for a lot of people. I think Interstellar's too much. Like Interstellar's always been just like too much for me. And I like Interstellar. But I don't know. I there's a little something in the back of my head where I'm like, what if it's not great?
I could see it being a little. So obviously Nolan is like kind of built, and that's like the amazing part about like his career is he's always been built for like the general audience and the critical audience. I could see this being a little too artsy for some people, especially in like the black and white sequences where he said that the black and white is the objective stuff and then the in color parts are the more subjective through Oppenheimer's eyes, more opinionated stuff. I could see that really throwing people off. Like when you make those kind of artistic decisions, that's not really built for like Joe Plummer, as my good friend Obama likes to say.
Joey Plums.
Beer Summit. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's gonna be great. I'm playing, I guess, dorky devil's advocate, but it is like something where I guess I've just kind of thought about it. I was talking to our friend Kirk Minahan about it. We were just like, look. I was like, I think it's going to be good. But like, what if – it's one of those things where if I'm walking out of the theater and I'm like, okay, that wasn't as amazing as I'd hoped. Like I almost feel like we're going to be like, oh, I guess I could have seen that coming. Like there's a couple things here and there that we've heard throughout like the process of this movie for like a couple years now. It's like, oh, I guess that kind of makes sense. Speaking of Robert Downey Jr., he was talking about the Doolittle and
– Yeah, that was a crazy one.
He also – Yeah, so go ahead and say what that was. Like he said the two most important movies of his past 25 years of his career were The Shaggy Dog and Doolittle. I guess it was because The Shaggy Dog convinced Disney to insure him again, and then Doolittle was just like a flop and like a wake-up call for him.
Yeah. Doolittle also, I think more importantly for him would be most important because they paid him like $40 million or something like that. They paid. I remember when it first came out, one of the big articles that came with it was how much they had paid Robert Downey Jr. to do that movie. What was the big part of it that we kept making fun of? Was it was a fart or a poop thing? But I forget exactly what it was. Was it because it was like a dragon involved? I remember that much. And I forget if Robert Downey Jr. has to fart or poop something, but like it was an integral part of the plot. And it was Jarvis, very dumb.
Jarvis, clean up my poopy diaper.
Yeah, my poopy diaper. It was just, it's just weird.
I finished the Marvel contract and hastily went into what had all the promise of being another big, fun, well-executed potential franchise in Doolittle. God, what a miss. I had some reservations. Me and my team seemed a little too excited about the deal, not quite excited enough about the merits of the execution. But at that point, I was bulletproof. I was the guru of all genre movies. And then...
I don't know about that one.
Honestly, the two most important films I've done in the last 25 years are The Shaggy Dog, because that was the film that got Disney saying they would insure me. And this, which makes a ton of sense. He played a fucking like a goofy villain. Then the second most important film was Doolittle, because Doolittle was a 2.5 year wound of squandered opportunity. And he said, Iron Man actor not only starred in Doolittle, but he was also a producer alongside his wife, Susan Downey, adding, the stress it put on my missus as she rolled her sleeves up to her armpits to make it even serviceable enough to bring to market was shocking. I just love, I love her all greased up, sleeves rolled up like, this movie fucking stinks.
By the way, I looked it up. It was a dragon fart. That was the integral part of the Doolittle execution. What a movie. What a picture.
He also said he thought when he went into Oppenheimer production, he thought he had forgotten how to act because of Marvel.
He said demanding was the Iron Man role in the last like six to 10 years? I don't know. Not very.
Which is funny because like Iron Man is objectively speaking, it's a great performance. Like he was always so good at Stark, but he is Tony Stark. Like I'm sure he got like lost in the fucking role and just like. Like even think about like him on every red carpet, even if it wasn't a Marvel movie, he was just Tony Stark. He had the glasses. He'd do the fucking peace sign. Like he'd become Stark.
I just imagine him walking around his house and he's got like the old Iron Man set, like the actual costumes. He's just lounging around in them.
Lounging. The old big metal one. Doing like his snap click thing with his fists all the time. Like, yeah. That's Oppenheimer. Purge 6 is in the work. And we'll follow America being broken into states based on ideology, sexuality, and religion. The quote from director James DeMonico is, you have your black state, your gay state, your white evangelical state. It's really a broken country.
Pass. The hardest of passes. That movie.
How many times do you make a sequel to this
so
movie?
Bad.
Got the cat femboy state.
I was about to say that would be the anime state's the one I'm really curious about.
How many times can you redo this movie or make a sequel and redo the way you say America is broken? It's just every movie America is like every one of these is just America is broken.
The Forever Purge. I'll never forget it in that trailer.
Make America purge again.
Whatever happened in the Forever Purge? Obviously, it wasn't forever.
No, sure wasn't.
Huh? Forever Purge was the Wild West one, right?
Yeah. That was the one where it was like Hispanic immigrants fighting against the Forever Purgists or something. I don't know. It was bad. All the Purge movies after the first one were pretty bad. So it's very... I don't think I'm very excited.
Where do we have...
The Ethno-State Purge.
Never forget that Marissa Tomei was in one of them. What a fucking... That's just crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Right, let's see the Purge franchise by me and Ken Jack here. Purge...
She's in charge of the Purge.
That is crazy. The Purge looks like a carbon copy of the Insidious rankings for us. It goes... Insidious went combined, our average scores, 55, 41, 21, 11... this one went 56, 44, 36, 18, 29. So we actually liked Forever Purge more. The first Purge was really, I mean, they're all bad.
Yeah. No good. I just don't know. How much money did the last one make? Or the one before that? Because I think the last one was a COVID movie. So like, what's the one before? Because there's Forever Purge. And then the one before that was the very unsubtle race one.
It's like no nuance whatsoever.
Yeah. I think it was like Trevon Rhodes was in it.
All right. So let's see. The Purge made.
The first Purge
made 89 off of 3. The Purge Anarchy made 111 off of 11 million. Election Year made 118 off of 10 million.
This is why they're going to keep making them forever. Because they cost fucking 20 million to make.
First Purge made 137 off of 13 million. But this one, this is interesting though. The Forever Purge made 77 off of 18. But that was July 2021. You could still consider that being the COVID era of movies. So that's, I guess you could probably kick that up a little more.
God damn.
Crazy.
Jason Blum should be running Warner Brothers, not fucking David Zaslav. Yeah. Jesus.
if you like these movies, I apologize, but like, you know, there's a guy that leaves this movie, every one of these, and goes, man, these are so fucking smart.
No, there can't be. I refuse to believe. It's not even just, it's not even the intelligence level of the film or whatever. They're just bad movies. They're like, right. They're not done well.
Because it is, you know, the original premise of The Purge is, I will always say, one of the biggest wasted opportunities. Like, it is, for what the first one is, it's fine. Like, it's bad. The concept, like, it's not good. Is cool. Like, it's whatever. It still works. Like, I don't, if it's on, I will watch it. But it is, the idea is significantly better than the output, because it is a cool idea.
Yeah, this is like the blue check mark Twitter, like fucking. wet dream, sort of, like when they're like, let's just divide the north into the south, and then all the cool people will go up north and all the bad people go down. Like, this is like their wet dream when they have
that. That was the reaction. That was, I am not a fan of Threads. I'm on Threads because, just in case Threads takes over Twitter, and Twitter, but Threads is just not a good social media. And
I only go there to post. I have never read another post on Threads, because their main feed is so fucking chaotic.
There's chronological timelines on social media. There's non-chronological, and then there's whatever Threads is. It's just, it's insane.
Mainlined.
You have to have on a social media, you have to have some form of chronological, because so much of that type of posting, unlike Instagram not being chronological, whatever, like, I don't care anymore, like, got over it, right? Like, TikTok, like, whatever, right? Something like a Twitter, and with Threads, is has to be, otherwise, like, it's not even just a sports thing, it's live events, it's elections, exactly. Like, it's news, and you don't get that on Threads. And also, I don't know who tweeted this, it wasn't like a crazy viral tweet, but somebody said, honestly, it might have been Coley, I might be wrong, but hey, Coley, I just attribute this to you. You can tell people on Threads are Instagram users who've never tweeted or don't use Twitter. Yes.
Very true.
Because all of their threads are like, oh man, just had this great, I don't know, fucking burrito. It's like, tag a buddy who loves burrito.
I mean, $5,000 today.
What's going on, Threads? It's like people who first are using Facebook for the first time in 2008, yeah. Right?
But that's the thing too, is that this whole mainline feed is like, I don't want to see those people ever. I kind of just want to have the same following that I have from Twitter and just see their chronological live updates to things, because that is the biggest benefit of going on Twitter, is like that you get that chronological quick reaction to anything that everyone's talking about or whatever in that moment. And like, that's never what I've been on Instagram for. You know what I mean? The best you get with that is like 500 people taking a picture of like the hazy smoke sky in New York City on their story at the same time. Like, that's the closest thing you'll get to it.
I need that. If I could port my following over to Threads, that would be great. Just cause like, that's the other thing. It's like, I've had this list of people I follow for 15 years now, or however, 14 years. It's like,
I'm following like my high school science teacher on Threads that I had on Instagram in like fucking 20, whatever.
I will say, you don't realize the stupidity of what you follow on Instagram until you log into Threads the first time. Yeah. And then, like, I follow a guy who only does self bowling ball nut shots.
I love that.
And they're quite funny every now and then. But when he's just like, he's just threading about like his, like,
it's like, he's just threading. He's like, God damn, my nuts hurt.
It's like Idiocracy. Like,
damn, this really makes me feel like a fucking idiot.
The funniest thing too is that Instagram users are by far, out of all the social media frequent users, the dumbest human beings on earth.
Oh,
Instagram
yeah.
users by a humongous margin. And some people try to argue TikTok. I don't even think it's close. I think it's Instagram far and away. You cannot post anything on Instagram that has anything beyond a surface level intention. Otherwise, you get just bombarded with the dumbest humans alive.
I think the problem with an Instagram comment section is you can't get dunked on hard enough. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And like the Twitter, if you post something stupid on Twitter, like in a reply, like in a comment section, you will get absolutely dunked on. And it's just impossible to do that on Instagram. TikTok, you can do it a little bit, especially with like the reply videos. Like you can do it. But Instagram, you just post into the ether.
We need more shame.
More
Much
shame.
More shame for more, dumb people.
More bullying.
Yeah. You could literally post on Instagram like, hey, I really want the sun to be extinguished. And you have 5,000 people. L comment, L post, clown emoji, you idiot. Don't you realize we wouldn't be able to live? It's incredible stuff. The intelligence level of Instagram.
I just saw a tweet about packed, sold out IMAX. Man, I'm so fucking excited to see this movie in IMAX today. Mm. Anyway, poster out for Wonka, meaning trailer very soon, 15 minutes. We will react to it live. We'll probably have to splice it in just based on how we're timing here, because we're on our last two news stories. Ryan Gosling, I'm Just Ken song from Barbie was released in a music video style, not a direct clip from the movie, right? Based on the way it plays out. The song is from the movie, but I think this is like more of a montage that covers up like whatever scene this would be in. What do we think about Gosling, his singing here?
I didn't watch it. I wanted to save it for Barbie. I saw like people reacting to it. I was like, I'm not watching this. I'm saving everything about this for when I go and watch it in a couple weeks.
I do not have the strength you have. I watched it and it was fucking awesome. But you're right, Jeff. I do think it's only a clip of the song, because I know Slash is supposed to be on that song too, which is... which is awesome.
What?
How the
fuck did Slash signed up on that?
Everyone is in this fucking movie. Everyone.
Fair.
This press tour and this, like, I got to hand it to Warner Brothers. They're releasing this movie, right? Yeah, it's a Warner Brothers movie. They have knocked this out of the park. In terms of, as far as press tours go and, like, promotion for a movie, this is about as good as I've seen in, like, recent memory. Like outside of like your Marvels and your big DC movies. Yeah, I mean, it's been nuts. Whatever they're paying Ryan Gosling, not enough. Every quote, every interview he gives, he gives like a great quote that just goes instantly viral.
I wonder if we'd win at a battle of like the one name musicians, like the Edge versus Slash versus
Seal,
Flea.
Prince brings it home.
Yeah, but he's he is like an incredible guitarist. I was just thinking more like, because I think of him as like voice versus like the other guys I all think of as purely music, you know, the Edge. It's so funny. You hear the name The Edge and then you look at The Edge and it's just some dude. But then then Slash, like that dude looks like Slash. Like he looks like his name should be Slash. But The Edge is just like a dude in a fucking beanie with a goatee. It's like, that's just a regular man. You're not edgy. You're not The Edge. Oh, and then Bono, just don't even get me fucking started.
moving on. Last thing. There's a couple other trailers. What is it? Metal. Twisted Metal with Anthony Mackie.
Looked better than I would have given it credit for. Based on the idea of it, I was like, this has no chance. The trailer was okay.
I like Anthony Mackie, but he feels incredibly miscast there.
Action comedy kind of feels like his thing.
I don't know what it is. It might just be the writing. The comedy just feels really...
The comedy stunk. It was very millennial, that just happened shit, you know?
Yes.
Another Killers of the Flower Moon trailer from a couple days ago as well. Nothing groundbreaking there. But the big one is the Ridley Scott Napoleon trailer. Another movie from Ridley Scott. I'm sure he'll release three other movies this year. Pulling up the Wikipedia. I can't just type in Napoleon. That'll give you the guy. But yes, it is based on the guy Napoleon. Joaquin Phoenix plays Napoleon.
It wasn't.
Vanessa Kirby is also in the movie, who's in Mission Impossible. Again, directed by Ridley Scott. Film depicts Napoleon's rise to power through the lens of his addictive and volatile relationship with Empress Josephine, played by
Vanessa Kirby. I don't know. I don't know what to think about this movie yet. It's Joaquin Phoenix, and I'll always be drawn to it. It's going to release November 22nd, and then it drops on Apple TV Plus a little while after that. This is not my time period, but I am intrigued because I love Ridley Scott, even though he has some duds here and there. And it's tough to not just watch Joaquin Phoenix get lost in a role.
Mm-hmm. I'm into it. I'm into this period, though, so that's like
right.
kind of a sucker move for me, I guess. But I mean, Ridley Scott, I like, and I would say just I kind of love more Ridley Scott movies than I do dislike them. Even like The Duel, I think I like more than both of you guys.
Right.
Like I'm into anything he wants to do, historical epics. If he wants to be just the historical epic guy, I'm totally down for that. Obviously, it's Gladiator 2 coming out soon, too. And I think we don't really get a lot of movies about this kind of era, especially not in like the big grand scale fights anymore. Like that's what all these like early 30s, 40s, 50s movies would be about. But then they kind of like have had a really long gap, and I'm pumped for this. I mean, fucking Joaquin Phoenix as Bonaparte feels like a no-brainer. Very excited to see him get his dick cut off after he dies on St. Right. Helens.
And then we'll watch Connor Roy buy it.
Try to buy it, yeah.
That'll be the post-credit scene. It'll just like go into like a weird antique gift shop, and then it'll like pan over to like a jar, and it'll just be a cock inside of a jar.
I was thinking it was the post credit was like him like lying on his death table getting his death mask or whatever, and then like you just see a doctor come in and just goes like snip snip with like a pair of scissors. Everyone's like, "Duh, Napoleon will not return in the mid 1800s.
Napoleon's cock will return, and
yeah, Napoleon's cock will return for sure. But
Avengers, the Kang Dynasty." No, I think this. I thought I love the trailer. I'll be honest. This immediately shot up like my most anticipated list. I don't know. It feels like Ken Jack was saying, very throwback Ridley Scott, where it's just epic, just massive. Like the shots from the desert when they were out there in front of the Grand Pyramids, incredible.
Mm-hmm. That's him, baby. Discovering the Rosetta Stone or some shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I love a movie about a short king. What can I say?
Fair enough. Also, he was very regular height. That was British propaganda.
What?
That's one of the funniest misconceptions about Napoleon. Not a very short man.
I spent my
regular
whole,
height.
I spent my whole life idolizing a lie.
Yeah, pretty much. he's regular. That was great British propaganda, by the way. That's an amazing propaganda move. So like, yeah, actually, this guy's short as hell.
Also,
basically 5 foot tall.
Not French, right? Like Italian?
It's Corsican, I think, which is at the time was part of France. I think. Don't fact check me on that.
No, fact check him and tweet at him.
I'm going to have like a fucking Napoleon bust head guy replying to me.
Actually.
Well. At
Western Values 76 or some shit.
All right. We have about.
By the way, this Wonka poster, I'm looking at it. Terrible poster.
How Willy Became Wonka?
Yeah, it says discover.
What a fucking tagline.
Discover how Willy became Wonka.
I have really bad vibes about this movie.
It's the guy who did Paddington, though, right?
Yes.
And like that's the big thing about this movie is like it's Paul King. He did both Paddington movies, and I can't think of many movies that like are in recent memory that like capture like that weird sense of like wonderment or have that sort of charisma to it that like kind of even match what Wonka gives you. So I don't know.
All
I can think about is fucking Jeremy Allen White if he played Wonka instead, because he fucking does look so much.
He also directed 2 episodes of Space Force.
Yeah, I'm looking through his
everyone
IMDb.
Has mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes.
He directed something called The Mighty Boosh.
I kind of like that.
Oh, baby.
So what we'll do is when that hits, we'll screen share it and we'll watch it live together. We'll probably splice it in. It'll be spliced in right here. But in real time, it premieres in 7 minutes. But for the sake of the pod, we'll splice it in here. All right, Willy Wonka trailer. We're going to play this now.
I've spent the past 7 years traveling the world perfecting my craft. You see, I'm something of a magician, inventor, and chocolate maker. So quiet up and listen down. Nope, scratch that. Reverse it.
Ooh. Mr. Wonka, I can see you're a man of great ingenuity.
What are you doing?
I'm making chocolate, of course. How do you like it? Dark, white, nutty, absolutely insane.
Many people have come here to sell chocolate. They've all been crushed by the chocolate cartel. You can't get a shop without selling chocolate, and you can't sell chocolate without a shop.
No daydreaming.
What are we gonna do, Willy?
Huh?
A double huh.
Do you have a pencil and paper?
Uh-huh.
I got an idea.
I know things haven't been easy for you. They're gonna get better.
You promise?
I pinky promise. That's the most solemn vow there is.
Where do we start?
A good chocolate is simple.
Where's this?
It's just weird. What's happening? Who wants a chocolate that makes it fly?
Well, let's find out, shall we?
Who's for a hoverjob?
Nothing to see here. Just a small group of people defying the laws of gravity.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Gallery Gourmet, my name is Willy Wonka.
He's good. Too good.
Pretty sure I've gained about 150 pounds in the last 2 weeks.
You could change her life, Mr. Wonka. Change all their lives.
Run away!
Every good thing in this world started with a dream. So you hold on to yours.
Here we go, Mama.
Mark my words! This is gonna be the greatest chocolate shop the world has ever seen!
You're the funny little man who's been following me.
I will have you know that I am a perfectly respectable size for an Oompa Loompa.
An Oompa what now?
Allow me to refresh your memory.
Oh, I don't think I want to hear that.
Too late. I've started dancing now. Once we've started, we can't stop.
Oh, I think I hated that.
Listen, I think I was in until that last little bit.
I don't know if I like the I don't know if I like the portrayal of that. That's weird. I don't. Any other thoughts?
Oh, let's go ahead and give our thoughts then. If you want to do the
That's what I was waiting for you to do.
Oh, okay. Well, I like the. It looks good. Visually speaking, I think that looks good. Of course, we're watching through a screen share, so it is a little laggy.
It looks very like whimsical and
fun. Very much trying to drive that home with the from the director of Paddington and the producers of Harry Potter, which was like okay. Timmy looks like he may be overacting it a little bit, but I guess you should.
It's just
I don't know.
That was my immediate takeaway. It's tough to judge off a trailer, but it just seems very that early thing where he said like the reverse thing where he's just very clearly just doing the Willy Wonka thing, the Gene Wilder thing. It's weird. It's like he's doing it. He's just trying to do an impression of him, but also do his own. It's odd.
If the Johnny Depp one leaned too hard into like the kind of dickish, dry humor side of Wonka, I think this may be leaning a little too hard into like the whimsical fun side. Like that's the thing about the Gene Wilder Wonka was like it was like a perfect balance between like whimsical and then also just complete dickhead.
just so sarcastic, so dry, so passive, and that's why it's such a perfect. I mean, that's why people view it as kind of like this. Like kids kind of get scared of that movie because he's not that warm and welcoming, yet he's the most warm and welcoming person at the same time. I mean, this is obviously, look, it's by someone who did Paddington. It's going to be more whimsical and fun and obviously very British and like, you know, goofy. But man, I don't know. That was that's not what I expected him to sound and be like in this movie.
Also, it's supposed to be a musical. Nope. Nothing in that trailer would tell you that's a musical. At all, except for some like dancing in there a little bit. But even then, you wouldn't guess. I would imagine if like you had no idea what this movie was, you wouldn't know that's a musical.
I disagree. I thought that looked pretty whimsically in musical, especially like they're doing those shots where like they're going through people like doing all the poses and shit in the train. I thought that looked very musical-ish.
I need him singing. That worries me that we didn't get him singing.
That was I don't.
I think it's good. I mean, after all the bitching we just did about people revealing too much in trailers, etc., stuff like that, like I that's something I'd rather see in the moment. I don't know. I was watching the trailer for Ahsoka as well.
Well, we're gonna watch the trailer for Ahsoka live now because it just dropped as well, and we're not gonna talk about it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna give it a chance. I'm not gonna like put it down, but that's not what I expected.
Also, was that Rowan Atkinson? Did I see
him? Mr. Bean?
I see him. Yeah, I see it.
You can't have a crazy British movie and not at least give Mr. Bean a little love. All right, we're gonna watch the Ahsoka trailer now, which they just dropped.
War is inevitable. One must destroy in order to create. We are no Jedi.
Oh.
I started hearing whispers of Thrawn's return as heir to the Empire.
What happens when we find Thrawn?
Power. Such as you've never dreamed.
I've spent most of my life fighting a war. That's why I'm trying to convince you to help me prevent another one.
You and I both know who could help you with this.
She's still just as stubborn as ever.
I bet your master found you difficult at times.
Anakin never got to finish my training. I walked away from him, just like I walked away from Sabine.
You never made things easy for me.
Master.
As a Jedi, sometimes you have to make the decision no one else can. But I'm counting on you to see this through.
Nice haircut. Sometimes we have to do what's right, regardless of our personal feelings.
Buckle up.
If we don't stop Thrawn, everything will be in vain. You have no power.
Anakin spoke highly of you.
I'm not here to discuss my past.
We have a lot of work to do.
Once a rebel, always a rebel.
Looks cool.
Let's go.
Thrawn looks really cool. That's great. A neat moment to see. I just got like a commemorative 20 Zahn, like Heir to the Empire, like box set. I mean, he's like one of my favorite characters ever, Star Wars wise. There's still like a weird, oddly like uncanny thing that I can't quite figure out with this show yet, just because it's so directly ported from like a goofy looking cartoon. Because Rebels looked a little like different of a look.
It's rounder
than Clone Wars. Yeah. I don't know. There's something just off about like Hera to me, but it looks really fucking awesome. It looks badass. Like Ahsoka looks awesome. And I just think it's such a cool character, and it's anything Filoni's not directly involved in. Like it's impossible to not be excited because he just cares so much. I'm excited for Thrawn. I don't know how much we're going to get of Thrawn though, too. Like it seems like it may not even be that much. Like it just might be like little bits, and it's more like future stuff with Thrawn. But I don't know. It looks pretty good.
I'm trying not to soy fish right now. If you guys can't tell, that was awesome. I love Ahsoka. She's so fucking cool. That line to open the trailer with Baylan. We are no Jedi. What a callback.
Yeah, even though the amount of Jedi that survived Order 66.
Unbelievable. I mean, Order 66 kind of stunk.
It did a bad job. I don't know who's to blame, the Sith or the Jedi, for that story being so exaggerated, but just so many survived.
Too many.
Crazy. Crazy that they just got away with that. All right, so the trailers for Ahsoka and Wonka. Ahsoka's surprise, but though they had like a behind the scenes the other day, so I guess it shouldn't be too surprising they dropped the trailer. And then Wonka, I don't know. Wonka is what it is. I'm I'm still excited. I'm excited for it, but I'm a little surprised by what we saw from Chalamet. I guess I didn't know what to expect with how he'd perform and how he'd act that character out. Very interested to see what people say online, though. That is going to be quite the reaction.
People are going to hate that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's very hard. Here's the thing. If that was what's his face, who did fucking Mary Poppins?
Lin-Manuel?
No, the director.
No,
it's something. Tom. No.
Tom Hooper.
Yeah.
He did Cats. He did all that. Or, no, Tom Hooper did like King's Speech and stuff. Who did fucking.
I thought it was.
Who did Mary Poppins? Though Tom Hooper did Cats. If Tom Hooper did this, I don't think I'd be very excited. Who did Mary Poppins Returns? Is that the name of the movie? Was it Mary Poppins Returns?
Rob Marshall.
Rob Marshall, right. If Rob Marshall, who is the only person ever allowed to direct a musical. If like Rob Marshall had did this, I don't think I'd be so positive after the trailer. Like because this is like the Paddington, like you know what? I'm going to, like, I do think like we could have something good here. Just because it's like, he's perfected that. And it's got that same feel as Paddington, is like fun, whimsical, good time, feel good. Because it does have a very feel good like vibe to it. No, we'll see. Interesting.
Roald Dahl is rolling over in his grave.
Roald Dahl.
Interesting.
Yeah, what happened in the actual sequel to Wonka? Was it like even to
the moon? They go to the fucking moon.
Yeah, and they hang out the president of the United States.
Hang out the president of the moon, and like everyone like is dying on Earth or some shit. It's like
glass elevator, right?
it's a really fucking weird. It's like they go to the moon in the elevator.
Yeah, I think it's called the glass elevator.
The glass elevator just keeps going, goes to the moon, or something like that. Anyway, that's our thoughts in the trailer. All right. Very curious how we reacted to that.
Outshine is the number one frozen fruit bar brand in America. And once you try them, it's easy to see why. Their fruit bars and mini fruit pops are made with real fruit or fruit juice using simple ingredients you can pronounce. That means no high fructose corn syrup and no artificial colors or flavors. Outshine bars are gluten-free and even a good source of vitamin C. And the flavor lineup? It's stacked. We're talking strawberry, mango, coconut, watermelon, pineapple, cherry, you name it, there's something for whatever you're craving. You've got classic fruit bars, mini fruit pops, and fruit blends that swirl multiple flavors together. Think pina colada, cherry limeade, and more. Find your new favorite refreshing snack, Outshine, at retailers nationwide.
Time for our interview with Pom Clementieff, and then our review of Insidious: The Last Door, the Red Door. Here's our interview. All right. We are joined by Pom Clementieff. Thank you so much for joining us. Mission Thank Impossible, you. Dead Reckoning, Part 1. Mm-hmm. You're talking to two of the biggest Mission Impossible fans there are, two of the biggest Marvel fans there are. But honestly, I have tickets for today. I have tickets for 2 days from now. I mean, it's just like the excitement level, and it's not just like, it's not like it's just us. It's already tracking. Everyone's going to go see it. You've got to be fired up after all this time, all this filming, all these stunts. It's finally here.
I mean, it's amazing. We shot the movie in so many locations for such a long time. And then we travel to all these beautiful countries to promote the movie and to premiere the movie with like different energy in each city. It's so cool. And yeah. And also myself, I'm a huge fan of Mission Impossible. So I get thrilled even like each time I watched the movie four times. And I usually never do that when I'm in the movie, you know, but this one is so, so, so good. You know,
we talked to Simon Pegg yesterday. We're actually going to air the interview. We're airing the interview after we air yours. And he actually mentioned in his interview, he said, like, you're exhausted by the end of it. And I just rewatched Fallout yesterday. And at the end of Mission Impossible Fallout, I'm like, good Lord. Like, I love it so much. But you were like, I feel like I was there. It's so intense. And now we just saw you a few, weeks or a month ago as Mantis. But now you're a villain. This is a bit of a different speed here.
Yeah, it's cool, right? I mean, it's so fun to be able to play these two characters who are like polar opposites, you know? So, yeah, I had a blast doing it and creating both characters.
And with Mantis too. Mantis is for the most part a pre-established character. I'm sure you had some creative stuff with James Gunn and the Guardians team over the years, but this character, I was reading about your character, Haley Atwell's character. You really got to craft what you were able to do here. They wanted you in the movie, and then from there, it's like they're casting you to make that character, not really the other way around. That has to be a great experience too.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I had so much freedom to. You know, to come up with ideas and, you know, such a collaborative process. So it's really, really fun, you know, creatively to do that. And, you know, and my character doesn't speak much. So I just spent a lot of time kind of like, you know, thinking about the behavior and the way she moves and, you know, the makeup and all these things, you know, that convey emotions in a different way.
Yeah, I do a lot of, I would say Paris does a lot of speaking with her face. If that makes sense. A lot of energy.
Yeah, there is like something that is an intensity and something kind of like there is a rage and emotions like boiling right under the skin. And it's like ready to explode, you know?
Yeah. There's a great scene without spoiling where like you just close a gate and it's just like there's a great aura, you know, intensity and aura without you having to say a word that you feel as an audience member. So there's been like a lot of with this movie, and this is going to happen with every Mission Impossible, a lot of like behind the scenes stuff. In this one, the Fiat chase through Paris has been or through Rome has been blown up out of everything, especially because all of it's like practical. It's Tom Cruise whipping around in this thing with Haley Atwell and they're handcuffed together and all this stuff. But how much of your part was practical? Because you're doing the chasing here in essentially like a massive tank.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it was like very technical. Like some was also like someone else driving in the back because it was so so technical, and the roads were like, you know, with like monuments, historical monuments. So you don't destroy the fountain that is like, you know, down the Spanish Steps, you know, it's just respect. So yeah, it was tough to shoot, but it was so much fun. I mean, you see it in the movie. I'm just like smiling, I'm laughing. Yeah. It was like me in real life, basically.
Yeah, I think Caesar would be okay if like you blew up a statue for a Mission Impossible movie. That's what he would have wanted, I think, in retrospect.
That'd be a tough way to alter your career. It's like, can Palm star in this movie? No, she's still paying back all the damage from what he did.
The Spanish Steps destroyed by Palm. What a nightmare. Yeah.
We saw Tom Cruise gifted you some skydiving lessons too. As far as practical stunts go, is that going to be in the repertoire next big movie you have?
I mean, it was so sweet. I would love to use it for a movie for sure, you know? Yeah, it would be so much fun. I would love to do that. And also I would love to do a Western or like do a movie with horses too. I love horses.
I think I read you went skydiving like dozens and dozens of times, right? In the last couple of years.
I have like 104 jumps right now. But as soon as I have some time off, I need to go back and jump some more. So, you know.
This is just complete irony. I was just on the Guardians of the Galaxy Tower of Terror ride at Disneyland, and I can barely do that. So skydiving is not quite in my, like, just the drop with a seatbelt is enough for me. But like, even when you're in the air skydiving, you're not filming, you're just doing it obviously for your own time. Have you thought about like, what could I do a trick here? Could I maybe use some moves here that way I could integrate into like maybe a stunt one day? Does that thought go through your head?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm just like always. I don't know. I just like, oh, that could be cool for a movie or like this exit. And just I like to experiment and try new things, you know? So, yeah, it would be cool to do it in a movie at some point.
We saw an amazing clip Simon Pegg posted that you're in yesterday. He finally got the post since the movie's out. It's behind the scenes of the motorcycle jump. And it's again, we know the movie's out. We know we've seen Tom Cruise walk the red carpet. So unless it's like a fake Tom Cruise, we know he survives the jump. But
clone. It's been a clone the whole time.
If anyone could do it, I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, I have a stunt double clone just in case. But what, like,
but it'd be fucking cool. That I would love to do a movie with a clone. It would be such a creepy story, like a horror movie with a clone.
Yeah. Riley Stearns did that recently. That was a really good one. Jillian from Guardians of the Galaxy, Nebula. She was in a movie.
Oh yes, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen it. Yeah, Duel, right? It's called?
Yes.
Yeah, I have to watch it. I haven't watched it yet.
It's very creepy. He's a good director too, and obviously she's amazing.
Your facial expression though, when he jumps off that cliff, you guys are, and Simon said too, it's like you guys had a pause. You were waiting for them to say like good canopy and everything. Like watching him do someone that the first time.
Canopy, but until then, we didn't know if he opened the parachute and if he was fine. So it was scary.
Have you ever had an exhilaration like that on set? Because that has to be just next level.
I mean, it was like the first day of shoot. So we're like, oh my God, this is, you know, fingers crossed. What the hell?
That's just crazy.
And he did it like 7 or 8 times in front of us. I don't remember exactly, but what?
Did it get less scary watching it as it went on? Or are you more like, geez, now we're really pressing our luck here?
I mean, I don't know. It's like a weird mix of feelings of, you know, you're scared, you're excited, you're like exhilarated. You're like, you're not sure, you know, and you stop breathing too, like, you know.
That'd be me, exactly. So without spoiling, again, you have some very tight quarters fight sequences. How hard is the fight choreo for something like that? Because with that, it's like, I feel like it's harder to use stunt doubles because like you are so tight and like the camera can only show, it needs to clip some of your face when you're doing something absolutely crazy.
I mean, I was doing everything in the alleyway fight. There's just I think one hard hit that, you know, at some point my body drops on the floor, like super, I get kicked or something. They did not want me to do it. I wanted to do it. It's like no. So I think it's like this one particular thing that was not, I think, the stunt double, but all the rest was me, you know. So you know, and you want to keep it like super, super real and gritty and sharp and like violent, you know. So it was really fun to get to do that, like to do the headbutt, to do the. But you know, like what is hard in a fight scene sometimes is not to give the hit, but it's like to get hit or to fake getting hit, because you have to really like, you have to do it so many times in a row and really sell the movement and really be in sync with the other actor, you know. So. But what is beautiful about working with Christopher McQuarrie and Tom Cruise is that for them, what is the most important is not just doing some cool moves, you know, it's about character development and what, how the audience is going to be touched by the fight in a way that, you know, so sometimes what draws you to the characters is when they're both exhausted on the floor, or like one just like stands back up and like, okay, I'm going to fight again, you know? And then you see like all these bits of that just kind of connects you with the soul of the character. And it's not just some cool moves, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's important because that is,
it's not just a fight choreography. It's about character, you know?
Yeah, and especially for Paris, because that fight scene does have such an important part later to play as well. So like you're saying, it's part of the character development.
Yeah, you see that also, like the look at the end of the fight, you know? Mm-hmm. Even like the makeup, the face is completely changed by the whole fight. And you see something a little bit more vulnerable too, which is so interesting. But it's, you know, really like Christopher McQuarrie's vision and Tom's vision too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it draws you to all the characters. And creates an emotion, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And especially because that whole sequence does get super emotional, too, as it goes on. So Guardians and Mission Impossible, obviously two big blockbusters, but two very different types of productions. Is the practical filming, the on-set stuff, where it's you, is that easier to do that versus, like, the green screen blockbusters where you're in, like, in prosthetic and all of this stuff, and, like, you're acting against tennis balls, like, you're doing this, you're in Hollywood, you're not like actually in Rome or Vienna or whatever. Like, which one of those is easier for you as an actor to get into?
I mean, I don't mind. I mean, of course, I'd rather work with human beings than like tennis balls, you know, but I don't mind like the green screen. And I love, you know, imagining things. It's just, it's my job, you know, and I love that. And like, it reminds me of when I was doing theater classes. Oh, you have a cat there. So cute.
It's a little less mind numbing. The cat's a little cuter, and less mind numbing than my cat. Metal thing.
I grew up with Siamese cats too.
Oh, did you? This is Momo.
Yeah, I had like two, like Morgan and Craquette. So cute.
There you go. What's up? You sleepy today? Yeah, he's cute.
So beautiful. Cooked. I got super distracted. Also, I have cats on my shirt. Look, it's like cats.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
What are the cats?
Oh my god, this cat is so cute.
He's a good guy. All right, Momo?
I'm super distracted now. What am I? Can we talk about cats instead?
Absolutely. This guy,
he cares about, like, Paris, like the character.
Movies.
Oh, wait. Movie stuff. Wait. I don't remember what I was talking about. No clue.
You know what we need? We need, Jeff, the tease, right? For the next, for part two.
We don't want to spoil anything, but we did hear a comment from you have to. So again, if we're not allowed to have you tease it, you can blame Simon Pegg. He did say some things that are already shot for the next part that you guys know about are pretty mind blowing. Like, to what level compared to this one? Like, how shocked will people be by what we see in the next one? Because at this point, I expect it. Really, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you expect it, of course, from Tom and McHugh. You know, they're always gonna make it better, better, better. They're amazing. No, they actually always start the movie with fighting, shooting the craziest stunt, like, first, you know, in the shoot. So they already shot that one for the next one. So it's insane. I saw some footage. I was like, oh my God.
See, that's like, I can't. You expect it, but I can't even sit here. And that's kind of the sick thing about these movies. And I mean that as a compliment. It's like, what could you even be talking about? And it's like,
it's insane. So I saw some stuff. It's mind blowing. So yeah, you're not even ready for it.
Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, part one. I mean, if you're not going to see it and you listen to this podcast, listen to another podcast. I don't think we need to tease it anymore. It is, again, we hold multiple tickets. Guardians, though. We got to talk a little about Guardians. We got you here. Crazy that it, for now, wrapped up. You know, we won't ask you the question if you come back. I'm sure you'd come back. You said you never know. But how much did that franchise, and not just Guardians, but like Avengers as well, in, you know, being in Infinity War, you know, being at the end of Endgame, all that, how much did that help you come into a larger family like Mission Impossible as well? Because I mean, Ving Rhames and Tom Cruise have been doing this for almost 30 years now. Like, that's the, like, you're leaving a pretty established family, like, what, almost 10 years now with Guardians? It's crazy. But this is a pretty established one as well. It had to help out coming from that world.
I mean, I don't know. It's like, I mean, this is what I do. It's like what you do as an actor, you know, you just meet new families and just join and just create something. And then usually you leave them. You know, but yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think about it that way, you know, but I think it's, I mean, it's amazing to join such an incredible franchise. And I've been such a fan for, you know, since I was a child. So, you know, and then you bring something new also, you know, so it's just, yeah, we just like, I don't know. It's just, it's. But I love working on this movie with Tom and McHugh. I'm like getting lost in my thoughts.
Is it weird too? Especially
I barely slept last night, guys. I'm struggling.
Yeah, it's a bit of a large movie coming out. Is it weird? Like you've mentioned that, like, you're a fan of the movies. You grew up with these movies. Is there, and you know, I'm sure people who join like a Marvel movie, they get that as well. But like, you've kind of been a part of the Marvel franchise in these for a little while now. But when you step on set and you're looking at like a franchise that you grew up in, is there ever like, do you allow yourself to have that kind of surreal moment where you're like, all right, soak this up for a second. This is kind of crazy. Like, I'm fighting Ethan Hunt and I'm fighting a character that I grew up watching. Or do you kind of have to like think past that? Cause you need to just focus on doing the movie.
I mean, yeah, of course you have like pinch me moments sometimes, you know, when I see Tom work and how amazing he is and he does, you know, a Dalek scene and then he's going to jump over a banister and just do a tuck and roll and sprint, you know. So I would look at him and was like, oh my God, Tom fucking Cruise. Like, right. He's amazing. He does that like so many times in a row. I'm like, what the hell? You know? So sometimes I was just watching him work and I was just like, wow, you know?
One of the last big movie stars. As far as Guardians goes, Mantis obviously left the team. We don't want to be like, oh, is Mantis going to come back in another movie? Any of that stuff. But what would you say you think the character of Mantis is up to now? If you had to give a wild guess, what do you want Mantis to be up to?
Oh my God. I have no clue. She's on a journey of self-discovery and she's, you know, riding her obelisks and yeah. Maybe having a chill time and just eating some Zark nuts that Drax didn't steal. And yeah.
Backpacking across Europe. I think that's where she's at right now.
Backpacking.
Do you have any, are there any kind of behind the scenes, close-knit family Guardians moments that nobody really knows about? Just like something that you guys would do on set or something that kind of established throughout your time together filming that just became kind of a tradition. Do you have anything like that?
I don't know if we have like a tradition with, we just, I mean, it's such an, such great people, you know, they're so awesome and easy to work with and kind and funny too. I don't know. I just love them. I miss them for sure. I mean, like, you know, the thing that I can remember is like, I would like bake a cake. Like I did one called, and I wrote, I am Groot on the first one, you know, when I shot Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And then when we wrapped Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, I wrote, we are Groot. And I might cry just saying.
Jeez, you might make us tear as Marvel fans.
Oh my God, I'm emotional now.
it was a long night.
Speaking of that family though, James Gunn, I know you can't say anything.
Yeah.
He's doing DC. You mentioned that you've talked about a character that you might do with DC. is it a character that you've heard of before talking to James Gunn, or is it kind of one of those weird James?
I know, like each time you guys are trying to get just one more
We've kind of stopped doing that over our, because we know you're not going to give us an answer, but I feel like this one, I was like, that's a unique way to ask. Is it a character you'd heard of before James Gunn talked to you about it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
She's playing Batman. But, you know,
it's just, we talked about it and he has like a specific character in mind and I'm like, oh yeah, that would be fucking cool. But you know, it's just early conversations, you know, so. Mm-hmm. You know,
it is cool with him. I read a tweet because his show Peacemaker, he has that one character Vigilante, which is such a funny, unique Gunn like take on a character. And they said that he's going to appear again in other things. And the idea of James Gunn getting to pick his weird, goofy, like DC characters you haven't heard of to show up in all these movies, it's pretty thrilling. It's a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see what he does with his movie too, with Superman.
Oh yeah, I just
We want to do something with you. We call it a six pack, just a six pack of rapid fire questions. The first of which being, what was your weirdest fan experience so far? What was the strangest interaction you've had with a fan? Oh my
God. I don't know. I'm just what I'm thinking of right now is like the first time I saw someone with a tattoo of Mantis on his hand. I was like, wow, such a commitment. You know, it's kind of like, oh, that's a lot.
The same answer Simon Pegg gave us yesterday. That's so funny. Yes. He's like, somebody had a tattoo of his face on their arm.
Yes.
We said it, you're not trained as a human being to react like properly to that. Like there's nothing that you're taught in life to be like, how do I react to somebody tattooing my face?
Yeah. I mean, like the thing is like Mantis like still doesn't just look like me like in real life. It's still a character. So, you know, if it was like just my face, it would be like a bit scary, I think.
What's a role that you auditioned for really wanted but didn't get?
Oh my God. Sometimes it's blessing in disguise, actually.
Yes.
You know, you really want something and you don't get it. And then like, no, I can't tell. It's too personal.
Okay, that's no problem. So like we said, we interviewed Simon Pegg yesterday and we asked him who he thought would be a good fit in the show The Boys that he does, the other superhero show, and he mentioned your name. Is that a show you would ever want to do? Would you ever like to do like
I love that show. I have to catch up on the episodes, but I love it. It's so funny and like and dark and horrible. I love it.
We'll look forward to that next season.
Movie related, three of your favorite movies. And I have a question about one movie that I read in an interview that you call the comfort movie, which blew me away. Is that true? You call Gone Girl? Yeah.
That's true. It's true. It's just when I feel like shit, I'm like, time to go to watch Gone Girl. So yeah,
David Fincher is unbelievable. So it's not like
a huge fan of his movies, of course. But this one, oh my God, I love it. And the monologue of the cool girl, oh my God. Mm-hmm.
So that be one of your what are your three favorite movies of all time? Or you can give a rough because I know it's tough to only dial it down to three.
Three of your favorites, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I love Kill Bill. I love Old Boy, Park Chan-wook. And I love Tropic Thunder.
That's Another great Tom Cruise role.
Wow, that's a great pick.
Yeah. I know. Tom is so amazing in the movie. Sometimes I ask Tom, can he do the dance in the Tropic Thunder? And then he does the dance.
With, he had the one stipulation he had with the Ben Stiller, right? Is the hands. It's so funny.
So funny.
One guilty pleasure movie, a movie that, you know, maybe it's not the best, but you do love it.
Oh my God. Do I have a guilty pleasure? I don't know. Do you have like movies that you like? And
yeah, something maybe, you know, it's not maybe the most popular movie of all time, but you see yourself going back to it now and then. I obviously not Gone Girl, as it's an Oscar nominated movie.
I mean, like some, you know, some movies sometimes with Cameron Diaz. I love Cameron Diaz and I miss
perfect
movies. And sometimes, of course, she's done amazing movies and she's done stuff that is like less, you know, some people would say like, oh, it's not great, but I love it because she puts me in a good mood. So yeah.
Charlie's Angels, I think would be.
Yeah, for example, you didn't say that it's a masterpiece, but they're fucking great in it. You
haven't yeah. been
watching it, but you know.
Last thing, you could plop yourself into any franchise. You're in Marvel, you're in Mission Impossible. We'll exclude DC because we already talked about it. If there's any franchise, any big movie, past or present, you could throw yourself into, what would it be?
Oh my God. I don't know.
You know what I was thinking? After we talked about that alleyway fight, you would be really cool in a movie. You ever watch the Raid movies? The Indonesian movies.
Oh,
You'd be really cool in one of those.
These are fucking cool. Yeah, that would be cool to do some like crazy action like that. Mm-hmm.
If you're going to keep kicking and fighting and everything, you may have to find yourself in the John Wick universe. That might have to be the next.
Oh, yeah. That would be awesome.
John Wick, of course. John Wick is cool. Yeah. I love Keanu. He's amazing. He's so nice, too. Yeah,
well, I was a dream.
Yeah, I was training at the stunt gym, you know, where Chad Stahelski and Dave Leach, you know, had this stunt gym, and I was like training there, and I would see Keanu somehow like train there too, and it was like so kind always.
Oh, that's
it's,
so cool.
It's crazy that you can be that kind and then turn on that role where it's so menacing but awesome. It's just John Wick.
Kind of the same, you know, his character speaks few words also in John Wick. It's all about, you know, all this silence, you know, and the mystery in the character, which is cool. So, yeah, it's an inspiration too.
John Wick helped usher in a new, I think, era of these wide shot, unbelievable fight action movies. And the other one, definitely Mission Impossible, Chris McQuarrie, Tom Cruise, and Tom Glentieff in this as a villain. If you've not seen it yet, if you're watching this, because some people have seen it already, it's Mission Impossible. Go see it on the biggest, loudest, craziest screen you can possibly find. See it 100 times. Thank you so much. And I hope we can talk to you again for a potential part two down the road. Maybe maybe a DC, or maybe it's Catwoman. I don't know. We're just keep throwing names out there and see if you
we'll just throw it out until we see a facial reaction.
Yeah, but like Catwoman, but with your cat, with your little son.
With my cat, yeah, with Momo. Yeah.
Catwoman is like, and I would wear your cat like around
on the shoulder,
neck, like a scarf.
Yeah,
but not dead, alive.
And I assumed alive.
Yeah, sidekick. Yeah,
I'm skinning my cat.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after, the Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together, and of course, their denim, because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
All right, big thanks to her. New badass character in the Mission Impossible universe.
Paris. Great name.
Yeah, it is. It is a great name. It's a sick name for that type of character. God, I'm going to see this movie like five fucking times. Cannot wait. Insidious and the Red Door. Or just the Red Door. There's no and the Red Door. It is the fifth Insidious movie. Many of the usual suspects are back as Gooch. I know Gooch is all fired up to see them return.
Has Ty Simpkins always been in this?
As
people said the same thing, leaving Endgame.
As Dalton, he was in
At least the first and the second, I know.
He's the kid on the fucking picture. No, he's like he's always been the dude.
Yeah, he's like he's Insidious Boy.
Yeah,
but I don't know if he's in one of them. I think one of them's a prequel, so I don't think he's in it. And I don't remember him really in The Last Key, but he might have been in The Last Key in like a scene or two. Also, don't forget he was in fucking Steel Magnolia's Endgame.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. The Tom Cruise Steel Magnolia haircut in this is rough for him. It was no good.
Everything is rough for him in this movie.
Yeah, it says Last Key he had archive footage. I don't really remember him in Last Key. I kind of remember Last Key because I fucking hated it so much. Rose Byrne back, Patrick Wilson, Ty Simpkins. It's just this movie's a bag of fucking farts, man. This movie stinks. I think it beat Indiana Jones at the box office, by the way, when it came out.
It did.
Just tough.
Woof.
I mean, it's them dealing with the fucking the further and the demon. The demon is a mildly recognizable demon if you know recent movies in horror. There's that one shot of Patrick Wilson from the first one, right, where the demon's behind him. It's a scary looking demon.
Great shot.
Yeah. Ken Jack and I, we gave Insidious the first one. I gave it a 59. He gave it a 51. Insidious Chapter 2, which came after that, obviously 39-43. Insidious Chapter 3, I believe that's a prequel. I don't really remember that movie. 22 and 21. And then The Last Key was the last one to come out. And The Last Key is just crusty asshole of a movie. It's just 13, and Kendra gave it a 9. I don't know. Does this movie, do these movies know what they are anymore either, by the way? Like, they just kind of exist on their own. Like, I've seen some reviewers say that too. It's like they just kind of exist in its own, like, weird world of, like, what is this?
I mean,
I think because they're not, what's it called, movies? They're not, God damn it!
A 24
Patrick Wilson. Oh. No, the other Patrick Wilson one, the Vera Farmiga one that we just fuck. What's the other horror franchise that Patrick Wilson does?
We were just talking about.
I mean,
the James Wan ones.
Yeah, it's not that
Annabelle. See,
like these two, Annabelle. Yeah, that just we just mentioned.
Oh, before, Conjuring, but, right?
Yeah. So like, it's not Conjuring. It's just Insidious. But like, I feel like I don't know. They're in like a weird space where, in my head, at least, I combine them. But I'm not a huge fan of these, so I don't know. I'm not an Insidious head. What are you gonna do? I'm not an Insidious head.
What are their fans not called? A Sid. Yeah. I was gonna say, what are the fans called?
Sids. Is there a pun with Sids? I guess or
Sids. Then like it is funny you say that because the Conjuring movies are there's a couple bad ones. There's a couple bad Annabelles. But the original Conjuring, the second Conjuring, the most recent one, like what was like the Devil.
The Devil Within or something like that.
The Devil
right?
Made Me Do It.
Devil Made Me Do It. Yeah.
Like it's not great, but it's also like not horrible. Like they're solid. Like James Wan is a great mind, and I think James Wan's involved with these as well. On a much much lesser level, he may not be, but I do think he is. But those ones are pretty focused up, and there's an element of like the type of horror and scare they want to give you. Where this one, like these kind of. I don't know, like the more you dive into, like Insidious was still scary. Insidious had like scares and moments, the first one, but there's that thing, and we kind of talked about it's kind of funny. We talk about it with like comic book movies or Star Wars, like when you get too deep into something, like it starts to really lose like the charm or the reason why. Or like the more I see of this demon, the less I'm scared of this demon. The more I see within that world, like the astral projections and all that, the less I just tend to care about it. Like the more you break down that wall of you know what's really happening here, and the more you see it, like I kind of lose my and especially when the movie sucks ass. That's the other thing. Like the movie just fucking stinks. I don't think it's as bad as The Last Key, but this movie is bad. 16 out of 100 for me. Not a good movie. Real stinky movie. Just a little above The Last Key. This sucks.
Yeah. The Last Key could also be the title of like a Scarface sequel if they ever want that.
The kid sucks.
Here's the trailer. Trailer dropped.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
All right. Any more thoughts on dumpy ass Insidious?
Nah, it stunk.
I had to text you, Jeff, like halfway through and ask if this was intended to be comedic at points, because the parts of the college are legitimately some of the worst. It's some of the worst writing. Like, it's laugh out loud funny. Like, how bad it is. Like, the frat party, like, it's like a spoof onto itself. Like, I didn't get it. Like, it was like, I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's the worst part of the movie. It's the worst part of the movie. It's not even close. And like, I can't stress enough that the kid, Dalton, is the problem with the movie.
Oh, see, no, I think the Chris, the roommate, is so much worse. He's bad. I more so
mean that storyline. Kid, the college, like that. I like Patrick Wilson in these. I think he's good in The Conjuring. I think he's good in these. Like, I think he's very good at capturing that possessed vibe. Maybe I'm watching too much Supernatural, where I just can't get into to demons that I'm not, you know, it's not into these demons,
ghouls, baby.
But I don't think Patrick Wilson's the problem here. I think you just have this college storyline sucks ass.
Yeah,
I'm just so not interested in it.
The Patrick Wilson universe of horror will survive. It's just, I think this movie really hammered home a point to me. As far as like my enjoyment within horror movies, which is that like a lot of movies, I would say like 99% of the time with horror franchises, I just don't like any of the entries outside of the original. Like, most of these are started by a movie where like, yeah, they'll have a cool concept, or the first movie will do something at least with a remote level of like thought process to it. Every time one of these movies or these properties gets turned into a franchise, it gets so bled to the bone and so reduced and so watered down from the original product every time. Because, and I don't know what the reasoning is behind it all, but like, I feel like I so very rarely like any sequel in a horror franchise. It's beyond rare. So like, for this, I think that just really hammered it home, where it's like, this doesn't feel like this should be, we are beyond the point where this has any creative artistry to it. It's just like, let's make a movie for $10 million and make $200 million from teenagers. So like, that's where I'm at, and that's what this really just hammered home to me.
Do you think
it's because like the backbone of a lot of these horror movies like is just like a very simple premise to set up just the scares, and then once you have that simple premise, it's just kind of impossible to get away from it and like build off of it.
I think it's kind of like Jeff's saying too, like with his, when he was watching this, like the more you learn about a scary entity, the less scared you get of it. Like, and that's something where it works kind of with like A Quiet Place, for example. Like, you had no idea what the fuck these things were and all those things. The more you explain about them, the less scared you get. But that's what they kind of did well, I think, in the second one, is they still weren't explaining a lot about it. The more mystery you have, the better. And that's not the case with almost all of these. They do as much as they can to give you too much lore and too much background and too much face time with whatever the entity is that is evil or horrifying. And that just, it makes it way less scary. And I'm done. I think I might just be done with horror franchises. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just no more horror sequels.
Scream 7?
Yeah, I've been done with horror sequels for a very long time.
Let's see. Since 2010, here are combined, like, buttered, like 70, 69 or above, like in the horror sequel like lane. 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is pushing it, is calling it.
It is very pushing it, yeah. And that's not even a Cloverfield movie. That's just a movie they call the Cloverfield movie.
The Fear Street movies were awesome.
That was kind of one movie though. Like,
right. Split, but even Split, it's like,
that's not horror.
That's not a sequel either. Really.
That's more like suspense.
It is technically. So right now you can kind of say nothing yet. Quiet Place Part 2.
Yeah.
That's one. Creep 2's up there. Scream, sure. one of the newer Screams with not the most recent one, the one before that. We had it just above. And then Halloween, The Conjuring 2, VHS 2, and then Halloween.
VHS is anthology, though. That doesn't count.
Yeah, that's true. And then Halloween, when they came back, that was really a soft reboot.
Yeah.
That's not a sequel to
that's
whatever
it.
Was happening.
It stops at that. And then, as you can imagine, I can scroll down pretty far and you just see tons of movies.
It's, I don't know if it's just something about it. Like, in just
Paranormal Activity, the marked ones.
Oh. That's another great example for a franchise that should have been just, you cut it off right there.
All right. Well, that's it. Stinky, stinky turd of a movie. 16 out of 100. Next week, episode later in the week, normal end of week episode, but next week we will review Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, as well as the drop our interview with Simon Pegg. I'll probably have seen it twice by then, maybe three times. We'll see.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Gotta soak it up. You can't, when a movie is made for IMAX and you can see it in the big format, you got to see it. I regret only seeing Top Gun in IMAX once.
Should've went to BYU. Twice. If you want to soak it up so bad.
What time are you going
tonight, Jeff? Just like, I'm going, I guess at 6:30 or at Eastern time, I'm going 3:30. I have to go to fucking Regal. Don't forget that.
Oh yeah.
That's my dedication. Oh, no. That's my dedication to this franchise. Is I'm going to drink fucking Pepsi products tonight.
Even Tom Cruise is like, "Oh, come on, man. You can wait."
Yeah, he's like, no, don't see it. Don't see it. Stay home. Stay home.
I would love to watch. I'll give you an at-home copy.
I would, if we, and it probably won't happen ever. But if it ever does and we get Tom Cruise, that would be a good question. Have him rank the theater chains.
I don't even think he would. I feel like he owns all of movies. I feel like he's just invested in all of them too much. He wouldn't even shit on like the worst ones, which would be Regal.
Well, enjoy if you're going to see Mission Impossible tonight or this weekend. Very excited for it. We'll be talking about it next week. That's it for Ken, Jack, and Gooch. I'm Jeff Tickle. Talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.